me for the better part of 2 decades now, and you know that I'm not necessarily a joke guy. I don't remember jokes. I don't tell a lot of jokes. I love a joke. I love joking. But yeah. I'm not like, all right, two priests and a rabbi walk into a bar. I don't remember them. I never remember jokes, right?
Yeah.
But I heard a joke last night that, honest to God, my immediate reaction was, Brad's going to love that joke. Got to remember that joke. So I'm going to launch this as da-da-da-da, Dave Kellett launching into a joke, which I never do, all right?
I can't wait.
Okay, Brad, why did the chicken cross the road?
I don't know.
To go to the idiot's house.
Okay, that's your joke, huh?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
It's the chicken.
Oh, that's delightful.
It literally, there's a lot to deconstruct actually there, because it takes two super tropey jokes that everybody knows and completely subverts them with like the most bare bones joke structure. And I was like, that's actually really, I think Brad will appreciate that as a joke structure.
Well, plus it's, you know, there's something that's nice about a joke that you can tell anybody. Like a good dirty joke, of course, is wonderful, but a joke that you can tell your kids or grandma, like the knock knock, who's there? The interrupting cow. The interrupting cow. Moo!
I forgot to say.
Yeah, you're a great partner there.
Oh my God, who's good with the 1-2? It's Dave Kellett. Tippy toes on. Oh, he's ready to go today. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, but I like those kind of jokes that you can tell just anybody, because they're just kind of fun. Now, so you already answered the question I was going to ask, and that is, were you a joke-telling kid growing up? And it doesn't sound like you were.
No, I got, for whatever reason, everyone in my life knew that I was a funny kid, so they gave me a lot of joke books, like 1,001 gag jokes, 1,001 knock-knock jokes, all those kind of, you know, they were always, someone saw them at a garage sale and got them for little
and
Dave or something,
got them
you
for
know.
Baby, yeah.
And, but I would read them, go, ha, and then promptly forget them, whereas I know for a fact that there is a significant portion of Brad Geiger's brain that, rather than remember loved ones' birthdates, will remember a vaudeville joke he heard in 1978, and like, I'm locking that away, I'm holding on to that gem.
I was the polar opposite. I memorized jokes, like those joke books, I would pore over. And not only like to memorize them, but to see what the mechanics was that made that joke work.
Right,
and try to deconstruct it so I could reconstruct it and reverse engineer it. And then when my parents' friends would come over for like a dinner party or something like that, or they'd be having a cookout in the back, I was that annoying 8-year-old kid that came up and started reciting jokes because I could get attention that way.
Yeah.
And I became good at it to the extent that pretty soon the friends would come over and say, "Hey, Brad, come on over, tell us a joke." It was a way that I distinguished myself, was by being able to tell, being the kid who could tell a joke.
And then you would turn around and walk away and at the family's barbecue, and everybody would go, oh, that poor kid.
Yeah. Well, no, they'd look, they'd look at my dad and just say, oh, you poor man.
That's a lifetime of hurt for that poor kid, huh?
Boy.
And meanwhile, you're strutting to the other side of the barbecue going, everybody loves my jokes.
Yeah, I got him with the old bartender was a duck joke. And meanwhile, you know, my dad's back there, you know, talking with one of my uncles, and he's saying, has he ever still figured out how to hit a hanging curveball? No, he's still...
No, he
jumps out of the batter's box. All right. Well, at least you got that bartender is a duck joke.
So I had speaking of a hanging curveball joke, or not jokes, but I got a story for a hanging curveball. The first coach that ever taught me how to hit curveballs.
Yeah.
Was like, all right, now here's how the physics of how the ball is going to work. It's going to start coming towards your chest, and then we'll curve down and away. So across the plate from you at right crotch level, you know, that kind of thing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you're sure I got it. And he instructs the pitcher, to throw a curveball at me. The other kid's like, all right, sure. And then I guess something happened. So, like, there was a conversation. They started talking. They turned back around. The kid threw a high and tight. Wasn't a curveball. Oh. It was a fastball, but I was thinking that I was about to practice my curveballs.
Yeah.
Hit me in the neck.
Hit me in the neck. Holy cats.
Talk about trust issues. I was like, I don't want to play yeah. baseball anymore.
Yeah, yeah. You jump out of the batter's box every time after that. It's like, yeah. no, I've already seen that. I'm not sticking around for this. I'm taking up checkers.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of bravery on the Dave Kellett front.
yeah.
Well, speaking of bravery, it's time for me to bravely say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. But before we jump into it, I want to say, speaking of support, we have to give a shout out and thanks to our good friends over at Wacom, WACOM.com, and the makers of the new Wacom One. They have been very kindly sponsoring Comic Lab all throughout 2020. And we super appreciate their support, also because it is a tool that we use, so we can heartily endorse it. So a huge shout out and a thank you to our friends, Wacom at WACOM.com and the makers of the new Wacom One.
Fantastic. So, Dave, let's jump right into it. We've got a question from one of our $5 level Patreon backers, and it goes like this. Brad and Dave, you cover so many things in your show, but I wanted to see if you had a chance to revisit your goals that you discussed last year or at the beginning of this year. Has the coronavirus situation changed the way you think about your comics or doing comics in general? Eventually, we will all get through this stronger. So how can the comics community come out of this stronger? So here's the deal. Dave, we shared our goals for 2020 at the beginning of the year. Right now it's June, so we're at the halfway point. How has the coronavirus global pandemic changed the way you approach those goals?
Well, that's a great question. There's a lot of answers to this because there's a lot of thoughts that, and anxieties and fears and plans of action that sprung up with both of us. Mm-hmm. I know because we had a lot of phone calls and texts in those first weeks. But let's talk about what I am grateful for. I am grateful for employment at a time when so many of our fellow folks in the world are not working.
Yeah.
And I'm very thankful that I have built a career for myself where I am my own boss and I don't rely on a publisher that might go under. And I don't rely on a distributor that might go under. And I don't rely on a boss whose whim might say, like, ooh, we need to make this bottom line. Bye, Dave. Thanks for here's your furlough. You know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
First of all, I want to start from a place of gratefulness that I am. And I'm thankful to my readers for sticking with me. They all could have said, like, now is a tight time. I'm going to pull back on that Patreon support or that book support or whatever it is that they do. So I'm grateful for that. But now, as far as what my plans do, like the rest of the world, you a little bit get that tightening of like, what do I do? What do I do? And so I definitely had to change my plans regarding the filmed project that I was going to do for that storyline. Yeah. And I think the audience knows my personality well enough to know that it is not dead. I am 1,000% going to do it. We just need an active human vaccine or a viable human vaccine. And then I'm back in business and I can do that project.
Yeah.
So that one had to go. And to be fair, that was a big chunk of my year, both schedule-wise and budget-wise. Like, it was going to cost $80,000 to $100,000 to make that show. And that's three to four people working in the studio here, and then a bunch of people hired in for... And so that was going to be logistically a big part of my year and a fun part of my year. I was looking forward to it emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to abandon that completely. So in lieu of that, Beth and I got on the phone in the early weeks of the pandemic, and we basically had one to two conversations about, hey, how do we save the farm, basically? You know, how do we keep generating income for the studio? And I felt it was important as an employer to tell Beth that I was going to do everything that I could to keep her employed. You know, it's just on a human level, like I wanted to reassure her. But I said, on the flip side of that, we got to talk about a lot of different strategies that we can use to bring in new or different income. And so we're pivoting now. We're going to make book Sheldon 9 and 10. So if you remember, Brad, I stopped book 8 many years ago. And I hadn't really had any plans to go back and do it, even though people were lightly asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. It was... in this situation, the place where I left off in the archives were black and white Sheldons. Mm-hmm. And you know there's almost nothing easier to put together in the world than a black and white comic book. Like
boom,
you can
boom, boom.
Bang that out.
Yep.
And the press proofs are easy and the costs are easy.
Yeah.
And so it's a nice way to round out my my library at a low cost and low effort way comparatively. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to kickstart two books at the same time. So two $15 to $20 books at the same time.
Great idea.
And so, and what I think, and actually, I might as well ask you in a live podcasting setting.
Yes, I will do the cover for the next book. I've been waiting for this. You're very kind. I appreciate it. I'll be happy to do the cover. I've got a few ideas. I'll run them past you. We've got some pinups that we can definitely put into play.
Great.
And thank you. I'm honored, and it's a privilege. And I will do my utmost to deliver top level work.
Awesome. So just in terms of delivering top level work, I need you to deliver, instead of using like Dropbox or emailing it to me,
if we could
do this, if you could print it out, take it outside, light it on fire, and then drop it into a metal trash can. That would be great. I'd love for you.
Oh, I have. It's been such a long time since my last comic convention. I haven't done an ash can in years.
Zingo. It was funny to me. What a dad moment I am that I had to say a metal trash can for safety. Like,
no,
don't do it in a plastic trash can. Anyway.
So what were you going to ask before I so rudely interrupted?
No, we're going to do two Sheldon books because and we're going to kickstart them at the same time. But the question that I was going to ask you was, I don't know how huge they're going to sell. They will be profitable. They will come into existence. We'll be able to make them. But my thought, Brad, is I want to try an experiment that I've never done before in my career. And I want to get your opinions on you because I trust you.
Yeah.
Do I kickstart it and say the only books that are ever going to be made of these are in the Kickstarter? So if you want one, and if you think you'll ever want one, you got to do the Kickstarter. Or am I shooting future Dave in the foot by not saying, well, I'm also going to produce 10% more than I need and I'll hold on to those?
Yeah, and I don't think that's a huge selling point. Your work is strong. I don't think you need to game the system. I think you can say, here's a book full of great content that you're going to like. Because you're going to want to sell these afterwards, you're going to want to distribute them through Amazon, you're going to want to do the standard routine bit with them. I don't think you need to game it. I think your readers are going to back this at word go when you say, here's a book of Sheldon, and they're going to say, you had me at the word Sheldon.
Yeah, okay. So my very back of envelope planning is that the two of these books together will make somewhere between $25,000-$50,000. Not enough to buy a solid gold car, but it'll help pay Beth's salary and my salary for a couple months. And then the real big enchilada for me coming forward is the Drive Act 3 book, but that won't be probably until the beginning of 2021.
Yeah.
So I need some other project to kickstart before then. And so I think that's, unfortunately, because it's going to be a little bit of a risk, the children's book that I want to do.
That's right.
I'm going to bring that forward a little bit. I'll be honest with you that I'm nervous because I need two successful Kickstarter projects a year in order to support myself and Beth and it's supplemented, of course, by Patreon and a little bit of Google Ads and usually conventions. And usually other supplemental income that I could go down the whole list. But I do need two successful Kickstarters to go a year. So I've already had one, my first ever one that I had to say, nope, that ain't going.
Yeah.
That one got pulled. And so now I have to kind of quickly turn on a dime. And I'm going to do the two Sheldon books, kickstarting at the same time, and then the children's book. And that's my short-term plan. And then my long-term plans depend. I'm doing a very different policy for me than I normally do. You know me, I normally plan really well, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
And I normally would be like, 5-year plan, 10-year plan, come on, let's get this going.
Yeah.
I am adopting at 46 a plan that I don't normally do, which is one day at a time. a little bit until the pandemic is over and until this possible depression passes, I'm basically taking this the best I can, one day at a time, one week at a time, one month at a time, and not worrying so much about what Dave 3 years from now is going to do, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's different for me. But now I've been talking way too long, and I'm actually really interested in how your plans changed from what we talked about at the beginning of the year to, oh, let's see, three of the largest events of the 21st century all happening in the same year in terms of economics, social unrest, and health policy at the same time.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm looking at where I'm at and looking at where I plan to be, and I'm going to, maybe this is me being myopic, but my plans haven't changed. My plan has always been to do two Kickstarters. I've got one done. It's going off to the printers within days here. I'll be packaging those up and doing artist editions and all like that over the summer. So that's all going pretty much according to plan. The second one is a really big project, which is doing the second edition of the Webcomics Handbook. I've been working with an editor to clean that stuff up and to just organize all of that material. That one's going to be a little bit more ticklish because it's going to come in later in the fall, and I want to kind of thread the needle because always I want to do my Kickstarters within the same year. I don't want to carry money over into the next year because then I have to pay taxes on it.
Yep.
So I've got to kind of, the timing may not be my friend on that one, but I'm moving forward on that as well. Patreon has not changed. I was watching Patreon very closely. And my idea with Patreon is this is not the time to let up. This is the time to pour more energy into Patreon, if anything else. And so Patreon, my approach to Patreon hasn't changed. The comic itself, I'm still doing that the same way that I had been doing it. I've got redoing my website that I've been talking about on this show for years now. I finally took the step on that. And not only is that going gangbusters, in other words, finally, when you go to read Evil Inc. on the Evil Inc. website, if you're on mobile, you get a vertical scroll. If you're on desktop, you get the full comic that you can read traditionally. And that has had really good knock-on effects because, of course, then I'm also publishing it in all kinds of different formats on different places that that play to the strengths of those places. In other words, I've got the vertical scroll all set up to go on Webtoons, and I can use the vertical scroll to do panel by panel on Instagram. And on Patreon. And of course, we already talked about the vertical scroll ebook. So doing that has been good. And I am, by the end of the summer, I'm going to pull one of my kids in probably to help do this on the Evil Inc. website. The last part of what I really envisioned as the next step for a webcomics website, I've already gotten the Patreon integration. I've already gotten the rethinking of how that landing page should go. And I've already got the responsiveness. The last thing I've got to do is to rethink how we do archives in a webcomic. This whole idea of hitting the previous button and hitting the previous button or hitting the next button and hitting the next button to read through a webcomic archive is clunky and horrible. And what I've already done, and we should talk about this at some point, there's been a little pushback. I took everything that is in a book. If there's an Evil Inc. that you can find in a book, if there's a comic you can find in a book, it is behind the Patreon paywall at the $2 level. In other words, if it's something that is in the Under New Management book, one of those comics, you've got to at least be a $2 member to see that on the website. Or you can buy the book, or you can get the ebook, or you can go to your local library and grab it that way. There's lots of ways to get it. But on the website, anything that's published now goes behind the paywall. The next step of that is that the archives now are going to be in ebook format. So the stuff that hasn't been put into a book yet, if you want to read that, I want that to be the easiest process possible. And again, I'm not relying on page views and ad clicks anymore. So now what's going to happen is each one of those in the archives, it's going to be divided up into storyline chunks. And if you're on a desktop, you're going to get an ebook style page by page, turning the page reading aspect, which is way better than, you know, click the preview, the previous button for a half page update. And if you're on a mobile, then you're going to read it through a vertical scroll. And of course, in doing that, at the bottom, underneath each one of those ebooks that they can freely read on my website, mm-hmm. they can also, I'd rather do this on my tablet. Boom, you can go to Gumroad and buy the ebook and read it that way. So gotcha. I'm completely revamping how we're approaching archives on a webcomic. And that is going, that hasn't changed due to the coronavirus. In fact, my boys are bored out of their skulls at this point and looking for jobs to do. And I'm like a lot of that is just grunt work, just loading the stuff into the website.
Right.
And
right.
that we're on track to do and have ready by the end of the summer.
So my first question is, you briefly obliquely mentioned you've had a little bit of pushback on it. What does that mean? What does that look like?
So there's only been a total of maybe three messages, two emails and one through direct messages on Twitter that basically say in a question, do I have to be a Patreon member to read the Evil Ink Archives? At which point I say, yeah. Anything that's in a book, you've got to at least be a Patreon backer at $2 or higher, or you can buy the ebook, and I list all the different ways, including going to your local library. That's my trump card, because I say, because I put this stuff out through Diamond Distribution and all that other stuff, everything is distributable, and that means that your library can pick it up.
And philosophically, you feel like you're keeping what, like the most recent 30 days free? Or no, I guess the most recent, whatever's not in a book is free.
There's a good 2 years of stuff that is free to read.
Okay. So this is interesting. And I feel like this warrants a whole separate conversation and a separate show about how that's a big step away from our traditional free to read model. Big step away.
Yeah.
And I would, let's circle back around on this in the months ahead, because I would like to see A, how it goes, and B, how your mood around it changes or reinforces itself, because that's a big change.
The most aggressive message I got was one person on Twitter saying, I can't, and by the way, they must have either created a Twitter account to do this. They wanted anonymity, it was clear. And they said, I can't believe you've got to be a Patreon backer to read the Evil Ink Archive. And my message was, yeah. I'm very good. That was the whole message. I said, yeah, you've got to pay to read this stuff. I'm very good. And he said, but I was looking forward to going back from the very beginning and reading all of your comics. And I said, you absolutely can do that. They're in books. You can get the ebooks. You can read all of that stuff. And it's worth it. I encourage you to do it. But
yeah, first of all, I like the self-confidence. I probably lack that, but the self-confidence there is great. And I would like to circle back around on this, because this warrants a whole discussion. But I want to say, back to the original question about our plans, and I have to say, as a friend looking in on you, I think that you have thrived in this environment in a way that I'm proud of you for. And in a way that maybe is helpful to share, because I don't always want to just show the successes and not the struggles or the failures.
Mm-hmm.
I will be honest, Brad, that I have been struggling in the last 3 months of the pandemic to do what I normally do, and it's been hard for me.
Yeah.
The confluence of homeschooling little ones and taking care of elderly parents who have some underlying comorbidities that my anxiety doesn't allow them to do what, you know, I'm like, you're not going to the grocery store. I'm doing that for you.
Right.
You know,
right.
You're not doing this. I'll handle contractors for you. I'm going to do it. But the problem is, anytime you take on additional people's duties in their lives, that's an hour here, that's an hour there, you know, and then homeschooling, and then all the this and that, and just maybe it's just me, but the anxiety of coronavirus living in a big city. And frankly, if you're in a small town in Nebraska right now listening, you probably don't have the top of mind awareness that someone in Chicago or New York or Philadelphia or LA or Seattle has in terms of the risks you take when you walk outside, right? Yeah. Because when I'm walking around sometimes, I'll get these weird anxieties about rounding a corner and bumping right into somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know that's a dumb fear, but that's like, what am I like? No, I don't want to bump into somebody, you know?
Yeah. And because our country is so screwed up, not only that, but you've got to worry about if you're wearing a mask, if somebody's going to give you static about wearing a mask.
You know,
you're just trying to protect yourself and you're just trying to do what's right. If you're just trying to be polite and just trying to be a thinking, caring human being, you got to worry about if somebody's going to give you a guff over it. So that's where my mind is. It's like, well, what happens if I get into a confrontation?
Well, and also I turn into a big Karen when I see people not wearing a mask. I'm like, come on, dude, put a mask on. It's not that hard. Or even worse, they've gone through the trouble of putting the mask on, but then it's tucked underneath their nose. And I'm like, you SOB, do you know what the... Anyway, so I have not been doing great. And it's worth being honest about it, that like I'm normally good in my productivity. I'm good in the way I structure my life. And I've been struggling in terms of... and this has happened before in my career, I should say that. When I first had a baby, oh my God, every pattern that I had built up in terms of productivity went out the window, right?
Yeah.
And I know you remember that year and a half too, where you're like, you think you're on top of it and it all just falls apart. And it's a struggle to do basic things. And you, so I'm trying to be kind to myself because I'm doing my best. And thankfully, I've built up enough goodwill with my readers over two decades where... and some strategies for shortcuts that I can take or workarounds that I can do in my career and my art making, that this is the time to use those, not forever, to help me get the job done as best I can. And so I only share that because I don't want it to be a highlight reel for people to be like, oh, everything's going great for Dave Kellett. In the sense that like, it's we all should acknowledge it's tricky. This is a tricky environment to do what we normally do, you know?
Just to take a quick tangent from that, is why when we talk about, because I've been wanting to come around to this, when we talk about the importance of community building in webcomics and how it really is an essential part of what we do is community building and how you've got to have that in the back of your head for every decision you make in terms of social media, outreach, planning, all of that stuff. It's about building community. And we had Scott Kurtz on the show a little while ago, and he was talking about this this big pivot he was making with Table Titans and how his wife said, your fans have always supported us. Tell them this is what you need to do, and they will support this. That is the end result of 20 years of community building. What you just said, Dave, where you said, my readers have always been there for me. That's the end result of 20 years of community building. When we talk about the importance of this aspect of what we do, it's because we know firsthand that the yield is so important. And what you are where you are now and being able to kind of swing with some of this stuff, because you did the hard work and the perceptive part of community building early on, right?
Yeah, and it's also another way to say it is separate from community building is the kindness and the giving for so many years.
Yeah.
Hopefully you plant some seeds that come back to help bear fruits of kindness that are coming your direction, you know? And so not in a Machiavellian way, in a trying to be a good community member way, you know?
Like, no, well, because being good and being the type of person that can grow this kind of community is difficult. And it's a lot easier to be, to be incendiary shake your fist under somebody's nose. But it's a lot harder to make the kind of decisions that are more based in kindness At least they are for me. Being kind is not first nature to me. It's definitely second nature. Yeah. So this is a reminder of why we do it. And that is because it's not only is it the right thing to do is to treat your fellow people with kindness, but also it's going to be that thing that grows into something very, very strong later on in life. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute and stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, Brad and I are going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
Yeah, because, you know, when you do, you'll get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And an exclusive Patreon post that go even deeper on the Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, no worries.
You can still support the show by rating us wherever you get podcasts.
Leave us a 5-star review and a few kind words.
And that, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
And now, let's talk comics. So, Dave, don't forget, we've got this special offer coming up fast. If you are a Patreon backer at the $5 tier by July 4th, you're going to get a whole lot of stuff. We're throwing the whole thing at you. And, of course, that's for our people who are joining us new and for existing members. All you have to do is be on the Comic Lab train by July 4th, and you are going to get 4 ebooks from both Dave and I and myself. That's going to be the How to Make Webcomics ebook, the Webcomics Handbook, Evil Inc. Under New Management, and the ebook of Drive Act 1. And also, and we're going to be setting this up at a later date, you're going to get an invite to Cocktails with Comic Lab. It's going to be a Zoom meetup. Dave and I are going to pour ourselves a couple of tasty adult beverages and have a socially distant party with you. So you can join us. We'll be talking. We'll be doing all kinds of fun stuff back and forth. It's just going to be a good excuse to kind of chew the fat a little bit and enjoy each other's company for a while. So that's going to be Cocktails with Comic Lab, and of course, all the other stuff you get from your $5 membership at patreon.com/comiclab, which is you get to send us a question at the end of every month. You get access to the Discord server, which is a fantastic community of like-minded artists. All kinds of great stuff. You get the show early, of course, nearly a week early. We're sending that thing out. So you get to hear the show before anyone else. And pro tips, where we just clear out all of the other extraneous stuff and get right down to actionable stuff you can use right now to get better at webcomics this week. Dave, how excited are you for this special offer?
It's exciting. I want to tell you, Brad, that when you said Cocktails with Comic Lab, you said a phrase like, it's basically our excuse to, and I thought you were going to say, let your hair down.
Yeah.
And I had this whole runner of jokes prepared for, like, Brad, it's a little dangerous for you to say you're going to let your hair down. You might not pick it back up again.
Somebody, if I let my hair down, someone's going to trip over it.
The only people that that make money when Brad lets his hair down is the Bosley hair replacement system. That's the
I am getting shaggy back there. I still haven't gotten to the point where I want to show up to a hair cutting place, and it's getting a little. Although, did I tell you I cut my kid's hair last week?
Yeah. How did those artist hands work? Did you do as good as my artist hands?
I actually am pretty good at this. Although he was getting so like wound up, he was starting to get lightheaded because he was so nervous. But I was watching these YouTube videos about how to do it. I was doing point cutting. I was doing with the shaver and all this other stuff. Other than the fact that he's a little lopsided and he won't sit down for me to let. Now it's one of those things where I see the problem. I see the flaws. Uh-huh. And I'm like, come on, sit down for 5 more minutes. I want to finish up that left hand side. And he's like, no, I'm done. I'm good. I don't need any more. And I'm like, no, just now it's just the opposite. I want to fine tune it. I want to go in there and get better and practice. Yeah. He doesn't want anything else to do with dad holding that clippers near his ear.
I'm glad that you were able to do it. No one in my house will let me cut their hair because I did so poorly on mine. But I think that's an unfair baseline fair. to Yeah, it's not a good baseline. If no. I could see what I was doing,
right?
I bet that I would be pretty good at cutting hair.
Yeah.
Anyway, all that to say. But anyway, thank you all for joining us over at patreon.com/comiclab on or by July, but definitely by or on and on July 4th. Talking is my new thing. I'm really trying to work on it. Four ebooks, Cocktails with Comic Lab, the show's early, 50 hours of pro tips, get to ask a question to the show, and you get Brad Geiger's friendship.
That's right. So, Dave, listen to this question we've got from $5 Patreon backer Graham Hamilton. He says, I've been thinking a lot about how future generations will look back on the times we're living through now, and I know both of you have a deep knowledge of comics history, so I'm eager to get your perspective on this. Isn't it weird that Homestuck is the only successful neo-comic, quote unquote? Doesn't it seem likelier that there would have been several examples to refer to by now? So Dave, Graham's question is simple. How come there haven't been more successful, quote unquote, neo-comics?
Well, first of all, I'd never heard the phrase neo-comics before. I don't hate it.
Neither did I.
I normally kind of get a when I hear a new phrase about describing a new wave of art, but I think neo-comics is an interesting way to describe something like Homestuck.
Yeah.
I would probably argue, Brad, that there are other comics that have done versions of or aspects of what this person is describing as neo-comics.
Yeah.
I think Ngozi has done it with her character blogging and, mm-hmm. You know, she rounds out the world of the characters that she has.
Right.
And I think Akewood, when it was still going, did a really good job of the characters all had their own Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
The characters would produce cookbooks or the characters would write this or that letter or blog post or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen versions of that.
I would even file The Oatmeal as a neo-comic. Because of how it's presented.
Yeah. Okay. I aspects of it. Like, you mean somehow how sometimes they're animated or sometimes they really break frame in terms of how they're
just in their overall presentation and how he's addressing webcomics publishing. I think there's elements of neo-comics-ism in there.
Well, I will say this. When you were previously discussing how archives could be done better,
mm-hmm.
I have long argued that no one does it more interestingly than Matt Inman in terms of, like, did you like this comic? Here are six other ones labeled with a header of that you could jump into right now. Not like hit the back button and see what else I've done. You know that.
But that's a completely different reading experience.
It's a totally different reading experience.
Yeah.
And there, sure, it has shortcomings, but I really think that Matt is onto something there.
Yeah.
And I wish I could do that for Sheldon. I have not done it, but anyway. So as far as other people that have experimented, I've seen it done across a couple different titles.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the reasons, Brad, that I think it doesn't happen is that it doesn't fall under the art of the possible a lot of time, you know?
Tell me what you mean by that.
Here's what I mean, is that it is hard enough to produce a compelling comic. You have to be good at art. You have to be good at writing. You have to be good at marrying the two, which is its own unique skill.
Yep.
Because you can be a good illustrator and a good writer, but you're not a good cartoonist, which is its own unique skill, right? You have to be good at graphic design. You have to be good at social outreach. You have to be good at basic business management and how to plan products that springboard off your titles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of this stuff is hard. And then when you ask or expect an artist to also be producing filmed video content or tweeting as their characters, a lot of that, it's not possible. And that's what I mean by it's not the art of the possible, because they either don't have the time, they don't have an ever-expanding skill set that could encompass these different multimedia platforms, right? Or they don't have the execution to the same level that they have in their quality comic, but it's a poor level, you know, animated GIF kind of a thing, you know? So, like, they're not as good at that as they are at the other thing, and so it kind of suffers, so they end up not doing it. That's what I'm saying, the art of the possible.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, as a flip side, that it also might be the case that comics are largely enough. And that's what the world has landed on, which is, like, sure, you can throw the kitchen sink at it, but comics are really good at doing what they do. And people like comics because they're comics. Like, I don't go to a Kurosawa film and be like, why is it so hard to read this film? I'm really having trouble reading this film. And it's like, well, no, film is good at being film. So just let it be that, you know, that kind of thing. So what are your thoughts, Brad? Why in your mind, are there not more neo comics?
I completely agree with your second point. I agree with your first point, but my mind immediately went to when Graham says, why do you think there haven't been more neo comics? My question is, why do you think we need more neo-comics? In other words, comics, if you go back to comics, really we're talking about something that started around, I mean, you can trace its roots back very, very far. But in terms of sequential comics, I just looked up, Mutt and Jeff started in 1907. So and it's probably not accurate. I know that's like technically like the first comic strip. But just so we can plant our flag somewhere, let's call that one of the first sequential comics. That's 120 years, during most of which we quickly came to kind of an idea of what comics are. And for the second 60% of that, comics has been largely unchanged. Yeah. In other words, it's gotten improved, it's gotten shined up and everything. But this idea of what we consider word balloons, in other words, not putting them as captions, not putting them as words that come snaking out of somebody's mouth, but this idea of a word balloon, that's been kind of figured out for a good 60 to 70 years.
They're always going to sit on the upper third. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
kind of thing. Yeah.
You know, we're going to read in a Z pattern, so on and so forth. This idea of gutters, this idea of what a sequential art is, on and so forth.
Each box represents a sequence of a continuing story, even like basic stuff, that we've figured out.
For the last 60 or so years, comics has been, in terms of its nuts and bolts, largely the same. And there's a reason for that, because it works.
And you know Brad believed in that point because that R had a lot of zhuzh on it. There's a reason for that.
Yeah. Well, that I bet
they're great.
Quick, name the character actor who voiced that original Tony the Tiger.
Oh my God, you are the oldest
He's
man
alive.
He's got
the greatest name you can't forget. Thor Ravenscroft.
What? That Thor person's name was Thor. Was that a given name or was that a taken name?
No, do I know Thor personally?
I don't know. If I asked you a dumb question about game shows, you give me their whole story about polio vaccines and all sorts of stuff, and I'm like, just give me the answer. So no, Thor Ravenscroft?
And he's also the person that sings You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch.
You're a mean one.
Because Boris Karloff couldn't carry a note in a waste paper basket. He couldn't sing. So they're like, oh, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine, Boris. Do this, Grinch. And they got him behind a mic to start singing. They're like, get us Thor Ravenscroft on the phone.
Thor Ravenscroft, man, like, why is that guy not carrying, like, a double-handed sword everywhere he goes?
Hello, I be Thor Ravenscroft.
I'm not sure.
Viking.
You can hear his voice in the background of the Pirates of Caribbean music too. Once you start to listen for that voice, he did tons of stuff all over the place.
You're right. He is on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. Yep. I know exactly what part you're talking about.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. He
it's
was
funny
yo,
how
honing
Walt,
it up.
When Walt found a voice that he liked, he was we're using you here, we're using you here. The same guy that did Baloo in the he was in every Disney project for like 10 years.
He was Phil Harris, and he started out, I don't know where he started out, but he was famous for being one of the players on the Jack Benny radio show. He was Phil Harris, and then he had his own show with Alice Smith. He had a great voice.
Oh, great. It was such a comforting, warm voice. Anyway, what the heck were we talking
what
about?
Was
we
my
went like
point?
Six iterations away from.
No, I'm just saying comics didn't need improving. And it's not that's not to take a piss all over Homestuck, which took that comic and made it into something greater. And it was wonderful for what it was. And if you're over listening to this podcast and you're like, I've got an idea how I can improvise on comics and do it with video and music and all this other stuff, do that thing. But I don't think that it's necessary to improve on this idea of what comics is. You can easily also say this idea of a five-member band, right? Originally, music was played by orchestras. An entire orchestras had to play a piece. And then it got a little bit smaller. Then it was a combo and so forth. But right now, most of the music that is that has instruments behind it, you've got a couple guitars, you know, your bass guitar, rhythm guitar, you've got a drummer, you've got a keyboard, you got a singer. And that's it, whether it's country or rock or folk or whatever, it kind of boils down along those lines. You could just as easily say, how come nobody has ever expanded that to a full orchestra? Well, they have. But really, this whole idea of a five-piece group, it was kind of like the perfect little assemblage, and you didn't need to improve on it.
Well, that's kind of why that goes back to my Art of the Possible. One of the reasons why a three-person, four-person, five-person band succeeds is it's just enough people to get the job done, but not so impossible that if Susan calls in sick, you can't do the gig, you know, or like you don't need 50 people. It's like forming, Voltron, where you need every damn car in the universe to join up. It's so much better to have the five lions. Everybody's accountable, you know, they'll show up. Anyway, I don't know that I've ever shared this with you, Brad, but when I started Drive, maybe I've shared this with you, I wanted it to be a Neo comic. Did I ever tell you this?
Did you really?
Yeah. So I had it planned where I was going to do, but I couldn't figure out how to do it from a programming standpoint where it would be comic, 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 radio play, comic, 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 in-world advertisement, comic, 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 filmed entertainment, comic, 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 right? I had all this idea that for those that read Drive, there are in-world media that we get in the story. So you'll read 20 pages of story, and then suddenly there'll be a memo, like an interoffice memo will be one of the pages of Drive, right? Or an imperial decree you'll show the paperwork that it appears on, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. I had intended that to be bigger than that, Brad, and it was going to have video, filmed content. It was going to have... my father-in-law, who worked in auto his whole life and is now retired, has an amazing baritone, Cuban accented voice. Going to have him play the emperor and film it and like have a costume done for him, right? Oh. And I was like, my father-in-law might enjoy to do. He's not an actor, but he's an amazing public speaker, right?
And he is a ham,
yeah. Right? Like he raised his daughter. He knows the power of performative art, right?
Yes.
And so I was like, it would be fun to have him be the emperor.
Yeah.
And I was going to film it and have that be one of the things in the archive, but I couldn't figure out how to program comic, 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 filmed entertainment, comic, 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 radio play. Yeah. And I was going to get actor friends to do some staged radio plays of Drive.
Lots of people with incredible voices.
Yeah, and friends that would have loved it, actor friends of mine
loved
that love sci-fi.
They would have loved to have been asked for something like that. Yeah, yeah. People with incredible voices. You know many people that would love to be involved with this that have voices that are rich and sonorous, wonderful voices.
But unfortunately, the only person I could get was doing a podcast with you. So that's those other people couldn't do it. So I So all this to say is I wanted to make Drive a Neo comic, but for me personally, just speaking personally, it boiled down to what was the Art of the Possible.
Right.
I couldn't do all that other stuff. And also, I mean, I could in the sense that thankfully I luck out that I know some actor friends. I know some film friends. I could have pulled it together, but I didn't have the technology wherewithal to go, I know how to program this and I don't know how to make the CSS format for different. I don't know. Anyway, so all that to say is I downgraded what I was going to do, my hopes for it.
Yeah.
But in the process, I made, I think, a really compelling sci-fi comic because comics do the job really well. And so I ended up to your second point, which is that comics are enough, basically. You know?
Yeah, it's enough to do a comic. For me, sometimes it's too much to ask to do
like,
a comic
I think there's not a lot of Neo comics because comics are enough. And also, it's hard to do it well. It's hard to do that one thing well. So
yeah. It really is.
That's like going to Mozart and being like, hey, Amadeus, love what you're doing. How come there's no interpretive dance incorporated into this?
Where are the fireworks?
Yeah.
What's his face gave us the 1812. It had cannons. I'm looking for, you know, a sparkler, something. Give me a phone,
Amadeus.
Yeah.
Come on.
Gee whiz. So listen, Dave, we've got time for one more question. And this one, man, I love talking comics nuts and bolts. This one's, you're going to love this. This one comes in from J-Lark, one of our Patreon backers, who says, hey, Brad and Dave, let's talk about gutters. Specifically, I was curious about the color choice behind gutters. Many comics on the web and in print keep their gutters white, even when the comic itself is in full color. Online, this looks great if the website also has a white background, but on sites with a darker color theme, it looks kind of off to me. Maybe there's still a good reason for it. Is there anything wrong with using some other solid color in our gutters, or should we stick with white? Dave, what do you think? Jay wants to do colored gutters.
I have two different ways of looking at this. One is historically, and one is practically right now. This is a fun question, by the way, because this is not something that people actively think about a lot.
Exactly.
So the color of gutters, I think primarily the purpose, the look, and the execution of gutters are all to get you from panel one to panel two without thinking about the gutter, right? That's the core job of a gutter is, I'm not here, don't look at me, la la la, I'm gonna drift into the background, don't pay attention to me.
Yeah.
If you notice me, I did my job wrong, right? And so if your color scheme of, say, your website works in such a way that a white gutter would draw your eye and draw attention to the gutter, then yes, use a colored gutter, right? No problem. Yeah. Which leads me to the second reason why I think white gutters are the default, which is historically, we would print, as to Brad's point with Mutt and Jeff, 120 years ago, Mutt and Jeff, black and white printing, right? It was the only thing available. And so the only negative space available was the absence of print, which was white, right?
Right.
And so, of course, comics are going to adopt that. And so then in the 60s, 70s, as color comics started to come in more and more, you would see them go, well, I want it to be a neutral.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to introduce a color because that draws an eye to it on a white newspaper page.
Yeah.
So, or on a white Marvel or DC page. So I'll just default back to white. And sure enough, the eye drifts over it as a convention and you go on to the next panel. Brad, what do you think? Why is white the default? Is it weird to use other colors?
The only thing I'm going to, I agree with every last word you said, except where you said, if it clashes with your website, then go with a colored gutter. I'm going to say you never, ever use a colored gutter. Now, I'm going to explain to you why. Because a gutter isn't a thing. And like Dave said, it's an absence of a thing. All right?
Yes.
It's the empty space between the panels. And the reason that it's white is because, like Dave explained, it's the paper is white and the paper is just coming through. There's actually nothing there. Right? Now, you can go with a black gutter. But only if you plan on doing black as a full bleed on an offset page, offset printed page. So it looks like you're printing it on a black sheet of paper.
Because nothing looks dumber than if that doesn't bleed to the edge of the page and there's a tiny bit of white around the edge. Oh,
yes.
That looks stupid.
Or if there's not an equal frame all the way around the outside. Like sometimes people color in their gutters on the inside, but not on the outside. That looks horrible.
Right.
So
you
got to understand what a gutter is before you can make this decision. This idea of coloring your gutters is a horrible idea because it's drawing attention to something that isn't there.
Yeah. And I think you explained that better than what I was trying to explain, which is that, like, let's say you have a transparent PNG or a transparent whatever it is, right?
Right.
And if your website happened to be a light blue, I was saying the absence of a color lets that light blue come through. And that seems okay to me. But again, to Brad's point, it's the absence of it.
Right.
It's not that you're putting the color in there. It's that it's already flowing through. And okay, but Brad has a point he wants to follow up with. Oh my God. I've never seen you lean closer to the camera. Brad, I could count the pores on your nose there. That was amazing.
And there are three. I have very, very large pores. There's only three of them.
Those pores are doing the Lord's work. Come on, there's three of us.
We can do this. No, if your website design is such that we're seeing your website background through your comic gutters, you're doing poor website design and you need to stop that. All right. It's not excusable. You need to put something back there behind it so that your comic can stand out from the background.
Yeah. No, in general, I agree with you. I have always chosen white. And I think most people's design for their web pages or displays would best be served by a white background.
Right.
Also, let's just be honest. White will allow your colors to have the least amount of clashes when they do appear.
Right.
You won't have contrast issues. You won't have weird vibratory issues. You know how certain colors, when they run up against each other, you get that vibe. Like if you look at a Captain Crunch box, it's not an accident that thing freaking vibrates because they chose colors that they want to represent what the sugar is about to do to you.
That's right. That's right. After your second bowl, your second bowl, those colors calm down because the two vibrations cancel each other out.
All of a sudden, the turtle started talking to me when I ate the Captain Crunch. Come, it's time for your spirit journey.
Oh, that's been one thing during this coronavirus pandemic. Somebody made the mistake of buying Frosted Flakes and bringing them into the house. And I started eating Frosted Flakes for breakfast, like a couple bowls at a time. That stuff will sneak right up on you. I had some very jittery mornings there for a while before I had to pull her back.
You're just going around the house. Come on, kids, let's do the dishes. Let's go back. Come on, who wants to clean the windows with me? Just running around the house. Yeah.
Let's clean the bricks one by one.
Everyone, grab the smallest toothbrush you own. Okay. So,
but remember, gutters are not things. They're absence of things.
Yes, and I think Brad...
To do gutters well, you got to know what you're doing. That's why a lot of times, and I see this like with a lot of comics, the gutters are too thin. If you're using the Manga Studio gutters that come preloaded, those for me, those are way too thin. You gotta work those out a little bit and set some new parameters. But doing good gutters and not letting panels crash into each other and getting to the point that if you have a vertical line that goes top to bottom, that it doesn't look like a panel border and get confused with a gutter. Doing good gutters, paying attention to that is really, really important.
Let me ask you, this is an imperfect science, but I want to propose something to you.
Yeah.
What do you think about the idea that the gutter width should be, the width of the gutter should be the exact or near exact width as the height of your letter forms of your lettering?
I'd say that's a good jumping off place. I don't know that I'd...
Like,
I don't
it's not
know
perfect.
That
it's not a science. Like, obviously, you need to noodle it. But I think, roughly speaking, the visual amount of space that one letter form turned on its side, doesn't matter what letter, E, T, M...
The cap height.
Yeah, turn it on its side, and that, roughly speaking, should be your gutter width.
Yep. I'd say you're in the hunt at that point.
Yeah. But just an interesting thought. Anyway, I think Brad and I are on the same page, even though Brad's explanation was probably better than mine about the absence of a thing rather than a thing.
Yeah.
But I think we're largely on the same page about that. So anyway, good luck with the guttering and with the guttering.
Good luck with the guttering.
We're going to get our heads out of the gutter now.
Hey, that means you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Brad Geiger, the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com and the editor of webcomics.com, and also my pal at pal.com.
And my good friend Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net, and this episode and all episodes were edited by the wonderful Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And of course, we thank our sponsors for today's show, Wacom over at WACOM.com. Wacom, the makers of the new Wacom One. And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on Patreon.com/Comic Lab. So we'll go ahead and say that like Brad looking at the bright world and go, oh boy, Patreon.com/Comic Lab.
All right, Dave, I got one for your little knock-knock joke. Did you hear about the guy that came home and found out that somebody had stolen every lamp in his house?
Every lamp?
Yeah.
I did not hear this
one. Oh, he was absolutely delighted.
Huh?